Good morning and happy Sabbath, One Turner Church. It is always great to be here with you, and we are well and truly in the sickness season. We have gone through a few things ourselves as a family, and as Paul has mentioned, there are quite a lot of people that I know of who are at home resting, and so we want to say hi to those online. You are also a part of this church family as well. We also do have a few people who are recovering from surgery. I actually see Rick here, so good to see you, Rick, from that surgery. And, of course, Pastor Daniel, who had his plastic nose surgery, which I had the exact same surgery a few years ago. And it did take a few weeks to kind of come back. So we want to just give our condolences. He's still alive. We want to give our well-being and wishes and prayers to you, Pastor Daniel, and your family. Not a good start, is it? We are continuing our series on the Book of Ruth. And does anyone know how many chapters are in the Book of Ruth? Four. Not a very big book to go through, right? And so we're going through the four chapters in 3 weeks. And of course, Pastor Wendy had talked about chapter one in the sense of being in the waiting, having to wait for God, and showing how Ruth was a great example of faith in that waiting. Now, we had to do a bit of a chopping around because I originally had the last sermon, which was chapter four. And I did quite a lot of research actually on chapter four. And there was a lot of theological ramifications, and you go through Genesis and Revelation, and you do a bit of gymnastics on the Bible. It was really quite interesting. But then, of course, Daniel, our pastor, called me and said, I'd like to switch, which is fine, of course. And so I got chapters 2 and 3 today. And I was looking at the content, and I realized something very quickly. And you probably know this if you've read the Book of Ruth. Does anyone know what the theme of chapters 2 and 3 are? If you're going to give it a genre, I would put it under the romance category. I got romance as my sermon. And as I was thinking about that, I thought, oh, yes, how exciting. I get to talk about Boaz and Ruth and the romance between them. And it made me remember of the pre-kid days with Maritza and myself, where we would sometimes, if we didn't have much on at night, and I can see parents, can you remember those times where you had lots of time on your hands? They were great times, weren't they? And so I remember when we had a bit more time and we'd watch a movie, and we'd kind of go one person would choose and the other person would choose the next time. And so I would choose, you know, some kind of action movie, something that I really like, Mission Impossible. And Maritza, in her wisdom, would choose a specific genre of movie every time. What do you reckon? Do anyone have a guess? Not horror. Although it was horror to me sometimes. Seeing a lot of romance movies that I had not been privy to for a very long time. And so I watched quite a lot of them and a lot of rom-coms. And I had a deal with her. I said, there's a site called IMDb. I don't know if you've heard of it. But if a movie does not get 7 out of 10, I try not to watch it. That's my cutoff. And she would actively try to find movies that would get 5 or 6. And it would really irk me because I would go through them. And some of them were good. But I would find that the story was almost the same with romance movies and novels, right? Man meets woman or boy meets girl, and they see each other across the room or across the classroom or the field or whatever it is, and they start falling in love, and obviously they have that story. But as I was looking at the story of Ruth and Boaz, there is a little bit more nuance to it. In fact, it's really quite beautiful if you've never read the story. And so we're going to have a look at Ruth chapter 2, and I invite you to open your Bibles to Ruth chapter 2. And as you're doing that, I want to give you just a few facts about the book of Ruth that you may not know. You may not know that the book of Ruth is one of two books that are named after women. Do you know what the other one is? Esther. And It's quite amazing to think about that, because when the Bible and all the books were written, it was very much male-centered. And so notice that both of those books are found in what testament? The Old Testament, right? And that's really quite interesting to see that. But even more surprising, this is another fact, is, did you know that the book of Ruth is the only book that is named after an ancestor of Jesus? Think about it. Because I actually went through the whole table of contents when I heard that, and I thought, surely there is a book named after an ancestor of Jesus. It's just Ruth. And that really kind of gave me some significance to this book, going that a lot of times we kind of go over it very quickly. It's stuck between two very consequential books of the book of Judges, and then it gets to 1 Samuel, and we know those stories of Saul and David and Solomon. But we are very quick to jump over this very small book called Ruth, but it has a lot of significance. And so because of the time that I have, very limited it is, we will be skipping past a few things, especially I'm covering two chapters today. And I just want to give you a bit of an overview of the four chapters, because the whole book is centered around one theme. Can anyone guess what the theme of the book of Ruth is? I can hear some whispers. Redemption is one. Every chapter of the book of Ruth is centered around faithfulness. And so when you look at chapter 1, we can obviously see that it is around the faithfulness of Ruth. And we see what she does, and she chooses Naomi and says, I will follow you and your people will be my people. In chapter 2, it's the faithfulness of God. In chapter 3, it is the faithfulness of Naomi. And in chapter 4, it is the faithfulness of Boaz. Now, of course, you see faithfulness of all four of them throughout the whole book. But the central theme, it's almost as if you're watching a movie, and at every chapter of the movie, it switches spotlight to a different character in the text. It's really quite beautiful. And so we'll be looking at the second and the third chapter. And what we will be doing today is answering this question. What do you do when life doesn't go the way you expect it to go? We saw in chapter 1, Ruth had her whole life changed. In fact, Ruth and Naomi both. And so we enter in chapter 2 as to see what the response is to all of the change that happened in their life. Now, I don't know about you, but when I read this story, I put myself in the story. Because all of us have gone through a time where things have not gone according to the way we thought they should have gone. And so I want you, if you're in that stage today, or if you had that in the past, maybe place yourself in the position of Ruth and let's see what is the response to when life throws some pretty curlies at you and you try to figure out what is your response. And the first response will be in those first two verses in chapter 2. And I believe that this represents what you can do in response. Let's have a look in the first two verses of chapter 2. And it says this. There was a relative of Naomi's husband, a man of great wealth, of the family of Elimelech. His name was Boaz. So Ruth the Moabitess said to Naomi, please let me go to the field and glean heads of grain after him, in whose sight I may find favor. This is the first time that we see Boaz enter the scene. And again, with the context of the story, we have chapter 1. We have Naomi and Ruth coming back from Moab after they had originally gone to get away from the famine. And so we have Boaz here coming in, and a lot of people have different translations. But what word is actually used in your translation? I want you to just shout it out as to how to describe Boaz, because every translation has a different word. Kinsman, in that first verse, straight away. Wow, well, that's an interesting one. That's a word that's going to be talked about next week. What other words are there?
Man of standing.
That's a good one. Any other ones?
Prominent and rich.
Okay, that's very different than man of standing, isn't it? What has rich got to do with being a man of standing? Well, maybe some people will put those two together. Any other ones? My one was a man who of great wealth. But others do say of great repute, good reputation. So all of these words are centered around one Hebrew word that is actually used here in the same place as Proverbs 31. And if you know Proverbs 31, you know that's talking about a woman, like the most important woman, the person that you are meant to be if you're a lady, or the type of woman that you're supposed to find if you're a man. And the word there is of noble character. And so we automatically see that Boaz is rich, he's noble, he's got a good reputation. Is this the type of guy that is kind of in those romance novels? What do you reckon? Yeah, right? It's kind of setting something up, isn't it? Right? And you're probably picturing a person in your mind, even though we don't get an idea of what Boaz looks like in the Bible. Now, on the flip side, we have Ruth. What type of person was Ruth? What was her character? What does verse 2 say about Ruth? It's only one thing. What does it say? She was a foreigner. She was a Moabite or a Moabitess, right? All it says is where she came from. So basically, she was a stranger. She was a foreigner. But we get an idea of her personality in chapter 1. And of course, we see more of that in this chapter 2. In fact, we see in verse 2, some versions, when Ruth is talking to Naomi, says, "Please, let me go into the field and glean heads of grain." And in fact, in verse 7, she does the same thing and she says, "Please, let me glean and gather after the reapers among the sheaves." You can kind of see a bit of humility in Ruth. Almost as if she is quiet, she's humble, but she knows her worth because she's strong and she's resilient, as we've seen. And so we have two very ideal types of people here, Boaz and Ruth. In fact, when I saw Ruth asking to please go and work, that was kind of a weird request. Could you imagine if you were a parent having your children come up to you and say, "Mom, Dad, can I please go and wash the dishes? Can I please go and clean my room, please?" Could you imagine that? You'd ask your partner to come slap you in the face because you're probably dreaming. That doesn't happen, right? But that's what Ruth is doing. She's going to Naomi and saying, "Hey, can I please go and do some work for us?" And it's so interesting to see this type of person that Ruth is. But you have to remember the context. She came from a different country. She had lost her husband and her father-in-law. Her whole life had been changed, and yet she was driven to continue and to keep going and to do something. See, a lot of the times when we have these moments of craziness where our life kind of falls apart, all we want to do is hide under the covers, hide from the world, and say, "Go away. Give me some time to get over it," right? That's what I would do. In fact, that's what I did. This scenario was almost identical to mine when I first moved to Australia. I was 15 years old, and I was in a very, very long-term relationship with this girl. And just before we had obviously come to Australia, I remember I was having a pretty good life. I had a good group of friends. Things were going really well. And then my mum comes to me one day, and she says, "Dan, we are moving country." Have you ever had that before? You've had no warning, and mum just comes in, and you think she wants to tell you to clean your room, and she goes, "We're going to move." And it's quite scary. And she said, "Yep, we're moving to Australia, but you have the choice. You don't have to come with us." And in context, my mum and my dad had divorced, and so I had my dad who was staying in New Zealand, and mum basically, in the nicest possible terms, she said, "You got to choose at 15. And so I had a good relationship with this girl. I had a good group of friends. I had a good church over in New Zealand. And I was so passionate about my country. And I thought to myself, "No, I'm not going to move. I'm going to stay here. I'm going to forge my own way. You go have fun over in Australia." You know, no Kiwis move to Australia at all. That doesn't happen. They're all coming here now. And so I thought to myself, how am I going to do this? Eventually, as you know, I'll skip a few steps. I came here and I chose to come to Australia. But I wanted to maintain that long-distance relationship and I wanted to keep my connection with my friends. And I said, I'll come over every 6 months. I'll make sure that, you know, we'll keep connected and we'll be okay. But obviously that didn't happen. And the relationship fell apart. And in the first 3 years of me moving to Australia, I had lost my friends group, my relationship, and my dad died, and my grandmother died. It all happened. And I felt quite guilty because I had left my dad and my grandma in New Zealand, and they passed away while I was here. And I could feel the guilt and the shame that was fallen upon me, and I asked myself the question, did I make the right decision in coming here? Because I'm now a foreigner in this country, in Australia, and I've lost almost everything that I had in New Zealand, and I felt like I had no identity. And I always put myself in the situation when I read the Bible, when I think to Ruth, how strong she is to be able to go through so much hurt and pain and wake up and go and work and to continue and to keep going. And I think that this is one of the answers to the response of the question, what do we do when life is unexpectedly different? When things happen that are not according to the way we think they should be, what do you do? Keep going. Keep fighting. Keep working. And in fact, here you can see that the character of both Ruth and Boaz were quite upstanding. And so I would say even further, keep working on your character. Keep working on who you are. Because you notice in the story that with that kind of romance part where they lock with each other's eyes across the field, you probably know the story, and if you don't, Ruth goes and she works in exactly the right field that Boaz owns. And by chance, Boaz is just walking across the field at exactly the same time. And they lock eyes and something happens. And there is an attraction. But it's amazing, to see the reasons behind the attraction. See, if you've watched lots of romance movies, you've read all those books, you kind of imagine what that connection would be like. And I guarantee you, you're probably thinking of two people who are very attractive in your mind, right? Are you thinking, anyone here thinking of two very ugly people in their mind when you think of this connection between Boaz and Ruth? Anyone here thinking of like a really old man and a woman who's like, you know, wearing drags and whatever else, like is just not that great looking? Anyone thinking that way? No, right? We're all thinking this kind of romantic story of this beautiful young lady meeting the strapping man and they find each other and they fall in love. Is that the story? No. There was actually a really big age gap between Boaz and Ruth. We don't really realize that. And do you know what? When you read these chapters, there is no description of their physical appearance anywhere. Because we place what we think is important on the text as we read it, and we imagine these beautiful people falling in love. But I can probably maybe hazard a guess as to why we do that in our brain. Number one, we want to have that fairy tale experience for ourselves. Now, whether or not you're married, if you're not, then maybe this is the type of connection that you guys want, and you want to have that story, and you want to be able to tell the kids that you met mum or dad across the field and you immediately fell in love. You know those stories, right? You don't want to have a story like, oh, yeah, we found each other on an app. Or, you know, we were just kind of walking around and we were, you know, friends for a long time and we said, yeah, might as well go out, right? You know, no one really wants that story. They want to have that romance because that's what we want in our lives. But number two, I'll say it even more so. The traits that were shared by Boaz and Ruth are beautiful in themselves. And so when we see those traits of Boaz being an upstanding gentleman and Ruth being a humble, beautiful servant of God, we immediately attach that to beauty. Because here's the kicker. Boaz liked Ruth because of what he saw in her, not on her. Boaz liked what he saw because he saw what was in here and not on here. See, when we talk about dating and falling in love and all these different things, we really do live in a very superficial world of looks and physical appearance. We place a lot of importance on what somebody looks like. And we've got things like social media that exacerbates all of that. And then you've got the movies which don't help when they have these beautiful, good-looking people all the time, you know, falling in love with each other. What kind of movies do you think when you think of romance movies? You think of what? Titanic, The Notebook. I'm struggling here because I've only got like two in my mind. Anyone else want to add to that? Pride and Prejudice. There we go. Right? Hugh Grant? No, I don't know. See, I have no idea. I wouldn't have a clue. Right? Casablanca. Now I'm going back, right? Right? We've got these romance movies where you have beautiful people falling in love and it's all about the physical appearance. In fact, in the modern day and age, the idea of dating and falling in love is, I like what I see. And sometimes you probably heard the idea of, I'll test drive the car. And if you know what that means, you'll understand. And then after we've gone past all the physical, then maybe we'll start getting to know each other. But that's not how it works. In fact, Boaz knew about Ruth's heart. We see that in the text here. In fact, in verse 8, have a look with me. Verse 8 to 12, I should say. It says, then Boaz said to Ruth, you will listen, my daughter, will you not? Do not go to glean in another field, nor go from here, but stay close by my young women. Let your eyes be on the field which they reap, and go after them. Have I not commanded the young men not to touch you? And when you are thirsty, go to the vessels and drink from what the young men have drawn. So she fell on her face, bowed down to the ground, and said to him, why have I found favor in your eyes, that you should take notice of me, since I am a foreigner? And Boaz answered and said to her, it has been fully reported to me all that you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband, and how you have left your father and your mother and the land of your birth and have come to a people whom you did not know before. The Lord repay your work, and a full reward will be given to you by the Lord God of Israel, under whose wings you have come for refuge. Can you see what attracted Boaz to Ruth? It was her heart. It was the reputation that went before her. And you've probably heard the statement that says, what catches them, keeps them. Have you heard that before? What catches them, keeps them. What that means is what you put out to the world to attract people is what will keep that person in the relationship. And so if the problem is, if the greatest trait that you have is your appearance, what will happen is that appearance, do they stay the same over time? No, they change, right? Appearances change all the time. And so what that means is the reason why that person is with you in the first place, if it has got to do with looks as the majority of the reason, then that will change. But if you are putting out your heart, if you put out your reputation, your character, that does not easily change. And I've seen a lot of research on people who have been together for such a long time in marriage. In fact, I could probably do a study here today because there's lots of people here who have very strong, long-lasting marriages. And I can guarantee you, yes, there is a physical attraction with that. That needs to happen. But the most important thing is they love each other for who they are. You know what one of the most romantic stories is? Is if somebody gets in an accident and, I don't know, or gets burnt or something happens to their physical appearance and they're in a hospital and their partner comes and stays with them and says, I don't care what you look like here because you're still the same person in here, right? That's the romance that we are talking about. And so when it comes to this first stage of asking the question, what do you do when life does not go as expected? The first thing that we do is we look and we work on ourselves. Because this could be a dating help book, or it could just be talking about life. Sometimes when things happen and the immediate response is to hide or to run away or to get angry. But what Ruth here is showing is that just keep going and be faithful and keep moving and work on yourself. Be a better person in here, even though the whole world is falling around against you. Because if you haven't gotten married, then if you work on your character, that's good for your future partner. But if you are married and you have kids and a family, then working on your character is good not only for the family, as in your partners, but you're also passing down something to the next generation to come. And so when we talk about this idea of what to do, number one, make sure you keep moving. Make sure you keep working on your character. But there's a second one. As we look at the story in Ruth, there's kind of this force that's working in the background because we kind of look at Ruth to see what she's doing. But I want you to notice in verse 3 specifically, in chapter 2, verse 3, it says this, "Then she left and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers." And notice this wording, "And she happened to come to the part where the field belonged to Boaz, who was of the family of Elimelech." She just happened to just stumble across the exact place that she needs to be in exactly the right time. Now, again, is this a trope that you find in every romance novel and movie ever? You're just exactly in the right time and the right place, right? But if you're reading this with eyes that come from God, then what would you actually attribute this to? Providence. Thank you, Leonard, I think. Was that Leonard? Yes, I heard that voice. Providence is so important when we're talking about this text because God's name isn't really mentioned that often in the book of Ruth. It's very much like a novel, but you can see this kind of working in the background. God's providence is happening, not a coincidence. And you'll notice that Ruth and Boaz, were they actually trying to look for each other when this happened? What do you reckon? Were they actively trying to find another partner? They weren't. It just happened to happen. You know what I mean? They just stumbled across it. You see, when we talk about this issue, a lot of people are in different stages of their lives. And so this may apply to very different scenarios in your life. But a lot of the time we sit back and we kind of wait for God to act. And we go, I'm not going to do anything until God does it for me. I know a few people like that. Sometimes they'll say things like, "Look, I'm not going to worry about baptism until I get the sign, and then I know I'll be ready, right? And then I can give my life to God." But what this text is saying is, be faithful, do what you need to do while you wait upon God, because God is working in the background for you. And this is really encouraging. You've probably heard of the quote, "You do your best and God does the rest," right? That's exactly what is happening here with Ruth and Boaz, is that they're both being faithful to what they are meant to be doing. Boaz is just being a good businessman, looking after his crops, making sure that everything is okay. And Ruth is actually being a faithful daughter-in-law by saying to Naomi, "I've got this. I'll look after us. I'll go on our work." Their intentions were not to try and control their life. They were just being faithful to what they should have done at that point. But God was working in the background. And you probably know Romans 8:28, which is just two verses after what you said, Paul. "And we know that God causes everything to work together for the good of those who are called according to the purpose for them." What does that mean? That means that there is always something happening in the background, that God is working for your good right now. And sometimes we can't see it. Sometimes we can't see what God is doing right now. If you just stop and you think right now and think of your life, can you identify where God is working? Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe God is very silent in your life. But I can guarantee you one thing. God is always in the background working for your good. And so you need to be faithful for what God has called you to do now, and He is working in the background. You see, when we talk about providence, and Leonard, you used the perfect word there. I'm going to actually add this to what I want to say. Do you know what the word providence actually means? When you split it up, pro means before, and the vidence, or it's video or vidie, means sight or to see. The word providence means to see before. And so when God has providence, what that means is that God can see before you. Did you know that? You see, for us, we only see things in a linear way. We can see one thing after another, but I guarantee if I gave you 5 minutes just to sit in silence and to think of your life up to this point, I guarantee you, you'd be able to see the hand of God moving. You'd be able to see and pinpoint highlights in your life where you say, if that didn't happen, then this wouldn't happen. And if this happened, well, then I wouldn't be here. Every one of us can see this in hindsight, but God can see it with his foresight right now. And so he asks you to trust him, to be able to trust the fact that he can see before you can. I think about my own life and I think of the highlights of some of the things that had to happen before I got to this point. And we can all do this, right? Even talking about moving to Australia, that was a huge thing, even though I had lost everything that I just told you. And I've gained much more. Even the fact of when I was in university doing my psych degree and knowing exactly where I was going to be. I was going to be a psychologist. I was going to do this. And then things happened and it just went kaput. And I thought, what is going on with my life? If that didn't happen, I wouldn't have gone to the Solomon Islands. I wouldn't have had my experience with God physically and spiritually, which means I wouldn't have gone to Avondale, which means I wouldn't have been a pastor. Who knows where I would have been? I even think about all these things in my life going back and saying, if this didn't happen, then this wouldn't happen, then this wouldn't happen. And a lot of the times when I see those little highlights of my life, do you know what usually signifies a change? It's usually something bad happening, typically. With all the really big things that happen in my life that change for the good, it is typically something bad in the moment. And so if you, at the moment, are going through something that is really challenging, whether or not it is problems with work or with health, you guys remember the things of my health, right? The first 2 or 3 years of ministry here and the amount of anxiety and pain I had to go through. I'm a better pastor because of that. Well and truly, my faith in God is 10 times stronger because I had to rely on him just to stand up on the pulpit and speak for 10 minutes. I don't think I would have that faith if I didn't go through that journey. And so I want you to think about all the things that you have gone through in your life, and maybe even right now, and I want you to be able to say, I trust in God's leading, in his providence, and the fact that he can see further than what I can. Ruth is stepping out in faith. And of course, the whole chapter 2, I look at the time and it's 12:15, haven't even got to chapter 3, so I'm going to do a real quick one. The whole idea of chapter 2 is Boaz rewarding Ruth for her faithfulness. And you notice a word as you keep reading the chapter in verse 23, the last verse of chapter 2. And it says this, "So she stayed close by the young woman of Boaz to glean until the end of the barley harvest and wheat harvest, and she dwelt with her mother-in-law." When we talk about the right time in the right place, I want to just quickly tell you what a glean is. Does anyone know what gleaning means? It's a very old term, right? And there's a lot of old terms in this story, but the idea of gleaning, actually I'll read it very quickly. In Leviticus 19 verses 9 to 10, it was actually a law that God had put in place to look after the poor. It says this, "When you harvest the crops of your land, do not harvest the grain along the edges of your field, and do not pick up what the harvesters drop. It is the same with your grape crop. Do not strip every last bunch of grapes from the vines, and do not pick up the grapes that fall to the ground. Leave them for the poor and for the foreigners living among you. I am the Lord your God." Can you see how Ruth, being not only in the right field and being in the right time to see Boaz, but she was there in the right season? Because at that moment, they were going through what they call the barley and wheat harvest. And this is the time where God had told all of the farmers and all those who owned land to let the poor and the foreigners glean from their produce. This was the only time where a rich person like Boaz would ever meet a poor person like Ruth and have those interactions. God had created the exact time, the only time that this would happen. And it was right here. And God's name isn't even mentioned in this chapter, but we can see that he was working for the good of those who were faithful to him. God causes everything to work together for the good of those who love God. But there is a number three, and I'll go through this very, very quickly, church. We've talked about the fact that you have something to do on your own strength to work on your character, but we also have the other side where you have to recognize that God is working in the background even though you can't see. But there is chapter three, which also gets forgotten sometimes. Chapter three is not about Ruth. Chapter three is not about Boaz. Chapter three is about Naomi. And you see that here in the first four verses in chapter three. Let's read that together. Then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, "My daughter, shall I not seek security for you, that it may be well with you? Now Boaz, whose young woman were with you, is he not our relative? In fact, he is winnowing barley tonight at the threshing floor. Therefore, wash yourself and anoint yourself, put on your best garment and go down to the threshing floor, but do not make yourself known to the man until he has finished eating and drinking. Then it shall be when he lies down, and you shall notice the place where he lies, and you shall go in and cover his feet and lie down, and he will tell you what you should do." Does any of that make sense to someone in 2024? It's weird, isn't it? Go and there's a lot of words there, right? Go and winnow at the threshing floor and go and uncover his feet and lie next to him and then wait for him to react. That sounds really romantic, doesn't it? Just exactly what the movies show. See, these are the customs that we don't understand. And in fact, a lot of this, because of time, I'm going to leave for Pastor Daniel next week, because he's going to be talking about what this overarching theme is called the Kinsman Redeemer, which actually falls along why Ruth was approaching him in a certain way. And in fact, there in Ruth 3, there's a part where she actually asks him to be under his cloak, which was actually a proposal for marriage. Ruth asked Boaz for marriage. And this was, 4,000 years ago, right? So this is stuff we don't understand. And I'm going to leave a bit of that to Daniel next week because he's going to go into that idea of Kinsman Redeemer. But the thing I want to focus on here is Naomi. See, Naomi, just with quick context, at the end of chapter 1, calls herself Mara. Does anyone know what Mara means? Bitter. Someone calls her by her name, Naomi, and she goes, no. My name is now Mara because I'm sad and I'm bitter. And she was. She had lost her husband and her son in the same almost, time frame, and was left with this lady, Ruth, who wanted to follow her. Now, we think that that's sweet, but can you imagine from Naomi's point of view, you have this foreigner who wants to come into your land, you've got another mouth to feed, you're dealing with grief and sorrow. In fact, Naomi said she was sad. But what does she do? The first verse is so amazing. Some translations might give it more oomph, but mine says, "My daughter, shall I not seek security for you, that you may be well?" Can you see the selflessness of Naomi? She was not really thinking about herself at this moment. She was thinking about the well-being of Ruth, even though she had gone through all of the pain and suffering, but all she wanted was the well-being of this person who wasn't even related to her. There was no connection whatsoever now that the son had died. And yet Naomi wanted to look after this girl, Ruth. And so the reason I bring this up, because I want to ask you this question. How many of you here today are in the position you are now because of the sacrifices of previous generations? How many of you are here in Australia, in the position that you're in the job that you're in, the person that you are, because of the sacrifices that people have made before you that we don't think about. Again, when I think about my own time and who I am, and I think about the sacrifices that my mother had made, she lived in a very poor village in the Philippines, had almost no hope for anything but to have children in that village and to live her whole life there. That was it. But she said to herself, I'm going to rise above this. And she got a scholarship and she worked hard and she found a pen pal in New Zealand, which became her husband, and moved over there, went completely to a different country. Why? Because she wanted the best, not only for herself, but for her future generations. And the sacrifices that she had to make, she had no idea how to speak English. And she jumps into this country and has no idea what is going on. No family, completely out in the open and vulnerable. But she did it because she wanted the best for her family, who had not come along yet. And I want you to think about where you are right now and the person you are because of some of the sacrifices that your family, your generations, your ancestors have done. Now, we can go as far as fighting wars for freedom to be able to live in a country like Australia, or we can go as small as your parents and what they had to do to be able to give you a better life. I am sure that they had their own pains and sufferings. I am sure that there would have been times where they wanted to hide under the doona and cry, but they got on with the job. And so I ask for you, where is your mindset? Are you thinking about your next generations? Are you setting up for the ones to come? Or are you just thinking about yourself? Sometimes we do that. See how this chapter is all about Naomi and how she sacrificed her own well-being so that Ruth could go out and live her life and find another husband and to go and to find a better place. And if you know the end of the story, you know Naomi benefits too. But we won't jump ahead too much. So I want to go back to that question and then we'll finish. What do you do when life doesn't go as expected? Well, you act on what you can do. You work on your character. You also realize what God is doing in the background, knowing that he's working for your good. And also acknowledge what has come before you, that there are people who have suffered, maybe even died, so that you may live and have a better life. And at the end of chapter 3, where I'll end it, in that last verse, Naomi talks to Ruth and says this, "Sit still, my daughter, until you know how the matter will turn out. For the man will not rest until he has concluded the matter this day." What is she saying? She said, "You've done all that you can do. You've worked on your character. You've made what you've given with your hands and your feet. You've done well. You've realized that God is working in the background. And you're also respecting me as your mother-in-law and accepting the wisdom from the previous generations. Now sit and wait and see what God, or in this case, what Boaz is going to do." But you can kind of see, church, that this is not just about Ruth and Boaz. This is actually an analogy for the Lord. And for us, we, if you have done everything that you can, just sit back and wait for the Lord to act. I'm not saying you don't do anything. In fact, number one was to keep going and to keep working and work on that character. But something big is going to happen eventually. In fact, we know that God will be coming back very soon. And that's what chapter 4 is all about. And so I don't want to eat into Daniel's time. And so I will end now. And I will just acknowledge you as you guys come up that no matter where you are in your life and no matter what unexpected things happen to you, whether or not you're before marriage, you're still looking for someone. I know that can be stressful in this day and age to find that spiritual man or woman who has the same beliefs as you. And is also upstanding, maybe rich, that would be nice too, right? Maybe all of these great traits that we want. But the most important thing for you to look for is not the outer appearance. In fact, we see that in 1 Samuel 16. He says, look to the heart. And so if you want someone to love you for who you are, then work on that heart now. And if you have found that someone, then keep working on your heart. And that family that you have will thrive because of it. Anyway, I'll let the team take over. Thank you, church.